The recent things that happened is that 120,000 Russian soldiers have been doxxed by hackers, meaning that their identities and their personal information has been released. And we're going to talk about, obviously, that is not in the realm of what we typically consider cyber warfare. But where does that type of thing fit in international military conflicts? There are differing opinions. It might sound like, no. Here's the one view on doxing soldiers and its validity. But there are actually some dissenting views on that. We're going to talk about that. And then number three, yesterday I told you that FIFA has determined Russian players can play in the World Cup, but no Russian national anthem, and they can't be identified as Russia. That's been canceled. Russia has now been totally thrown out of the World Cup. FIFA has decided it's just a hard no. And we're going to talk about that and other kind of sports related sanctions that have come in the past and that may come in the future. All of those stories and more are on today's bonus show. How do you get access to the bonus show? Simple. Sign up for a membership at joinpacman.com. You can use the coupon code Please Don't War. I know it sounds ungrammatical, but that's what it is. The coupon code is Please Don't War. You'll get a discount off of a membership. You'll get access to the bonus show, the commercial-free audio feed, the commercial-free video feed, and much, much more. We will see you then and tonight live on YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook for Joe Biden's State of the Union address.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable
word. RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
RCT. in sound from way out.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic...
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
January 6th was the culmination of an attempted coup. A brazen attempt, as one rioter put it shortly after January 6th, to overthrow the government. The violence was no accident. It represents Senate Trump's last stand, most desperate chance to halt the transfer of power.
In its first public hearing, the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection accuses Donald Trump of staging an attempted coup with the help of his allies in government and two far-right groups, the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. We'll hear excerpts from the hearing, including a message from the committee vice chair, Liz Cheney, to her fellow Republicans.
Tonight, I say this to my Republican colleagues who are defending the indefensible. There will come a day when Donald Trump is gone, but your dishonor will remain.
And we'll hear newly released video testimony from Donald Trump's daughter, Ivanka, and former Attorney General William Barr challenging Trump's claims of election fraud.
I told the president it was bullshit, and, I didn't want to be a part of it.
How did that affect your perspective about the election when Attorney General Barr made that statement?
It affected my perspective. I respect Attorney General Barr. So I accepted what he said, was saying.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The House committee investigating the January 6th insurrection said Thursday Donald Trump was at the center of a violent conspiracy to overturn the results of the 2020 election. In a primetime hearing, the committee revealed Trump's own Attorney General, William Barr, as well as Trump's daughter, Ivanka, thought there was no basis for Trump's claims of election fraud. Committee Chair Benny Thompson said January 6th was the culmination of an attempted coup by Donald Trump, who supported the mob's chants of "Hang Mike Pence." Thompson compared the January 6th insurrection to the ransacking of Washington, D.C. by British forces more than two centuries ago.
But unlike in 1814, it was domestic enemies of the Constitution who stormed the Capitol and occupied the Capitol, who sought to thwart the will of the people to stop the transfer of power. And so they did. So at the encouragement of the President of the United States, trying to stop the transfer of power, a precedent that had stood for 220 years.
Committee co-chair Liz Cheney, one of just two Republicans on the panel, revealed multiple Republican lawmakers sought pardons from Trump after January 6th. After headlines, we'll spend the rest of the hour airing excerpts from Thursday's historic hearing. In Michigan, the FBI arrested Republican gubernatorial candidate Ryan Kelly at his home Thursday morning over his role in the January 6th Capitol assault. Kelly faces charges including engaging in acts of physical violence, knowingly entering restricted grounds, property destruction, and disorderly conduct. He's among some 840 people charged over the insurrection so far. In Maryland, an employee opened fire on his co-workers at a manufacturing plant in rural Washington County Thursday, killing three people and critically injuring a fourth. Maryland State Police say the 42-year-old suspect then fled the scene, but was later tracked down, wounded, and arrested after an exchange of gunfire that left a state trooper injured. According to the Gun Violence Archive, there have been over 270 mass shootings across the United States so far this year. In Texas, the chief of police for the Uvalde School District is defending officers against charges they failed to act as an 18-year-old gunman slaughtered 19 fourth graders and their two teachers in May. Pete Arredondo told the Texas Tribune he spent more than an hour in the hallway of Robb Elementary School calling for tactical gear, a sniper, and keys to get inside the locked classroom where the shooter had holed up. Meanwhile, the New York Times reports Uvalde police delayed entering the school even as they became aware that some children urgently needed medical treatment. The New York Times reports 1 hour and 17 minutes passed before police finally entered the classroom. By then, 60 officers had assembled on the scene. Body cam footage reveals one officer said, quote, people are going to ask why we're taking so long. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is asking the United States and other allies for the rapid delivery of more heavy weaponry, saying it's critical to the fight against Russia's advance in the eastern Donbas region. Ukraine's military claims that soldiers continue to hold ground in the industrial part of Severodonetsk while battling Russian troops street by street. Elsewhere, Ukraine says three civilians were killed and five wounded by Russian shells falling on the city of Kharkiv. Meanwhile, a court in Russian-controlled eastern Ukraine has sentenced two Britons and a Moroccan to death, accusing them of being mercenaries for Ukraine's army. In Brazil, blood has been found in a boat belonging to a suspect in the disappearance of British journalist Dom Phillips and the Brazilian researcher Bruno Araujo Pereira. Investigators say they're sampling the blood to see if it came from one or both of the two men. The pair were reported missing on Sunday while working on a book project about conservation efforts in a remote part of the Amazon that's become a haven for illegal mining, fishing, and international drug trafficking. Dom Phillips' wife, Alessandra Sampaio, appealed in an emotional video for Brazilian authorities to intensify the search efforts.
Why is that happening? I just don't want him and Bruno to suffer. They're in the jungle. There is a lot of cruelty. I'm heartbroken.
The Palestinian Ministry of Foreign Affairs has handed over the results of its probe into the killing of journalist Shireen Abu Akleh to the International Criminal Court. Separate investigations by Al Jazeera, the Associated Press, and CNN have all concluded it was Israeli forces that shot and killed Abu Akleh on May 11th as she covered an Israeli raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the West Bank. This week, Secretary of State Antony Blinken was confronted by a journalist over the Biden administration's continued support for Israel and Saudi Arabia after the killing of journalists, including Jamal Khashoggi and Shireen Abu Akleh.
Why is there no accountability for Israel or Saudi Arabia for murdering journalists? It is one of the most dangerous places in the world to be a journalist in Palestine.
I deplore the loss of Shireen. She was a remarkable journalist, an American citizen, as you all know. And there, too, we are determined to follow the facts and get to the truth of what happened to her. No, they have not yet been. No, they have. I'm sorry, with respect, they have not yet been established. We're looking for. No, they have not. That we were looking for an independent, credible investigation.
Blinken was questioned by journalist Abby Martin. Following Blinken's remarks, the Biden administration said Thursday Israel should lead the investigation into Abu Akleh's killing. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has met with China's Minister of National Defense. The pair had a brief meeting scheduled on the sidelines of the Shangri-La Dialogue, a gathering of world leaders and military officials in Singapore. The meeting comes amidst tension between the U.S. and China over Taiwan and North Korea, and as the Biden administration presses ahead with plans to arm Australia with nuclear-powered submarines. The United Nations nuclear watchdog warns Iran has begun removing surveillance cameras from nuclear sites, setting back efforts to revive the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. Rafael Grossi, the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, said Thursday the move could leave inspectors unable to detect whether Iran is producing weapons-grade uranium.
What we are seeing is a because of the decision that has is been announced to us today, is a decrease of the visibility that the agency is going to have about what's happening in Iran. And of course, that this is something I deplore.
Grossi called on Iran to reverse what he said would be a fatal blow to talks aimed at restoring a deal to allow Iran to enrich uranium for peaceful purposes in exchange for relief from sanctions. Former President Trump withdrew the U.S. from the Iran nuclear deal in 2018. Iran insists any new deal must include sanctions relief and a commitment that the U.S. will not renege on its agreement a second time. A warning to our audience, our next stories contain graphic images and descriptions of police violence. In Michigan, the Grand Rapids police officer who killed Patrick Lioia has been charged with murder. Kent County Prosecutor Christopher Becker announced the charges Thursday, more than 2 months after Officer Christopher Schur shot Lioia, a 26-year-old Congolese refugee, in the back of the head during a traffic stop.
On his investigation, based on everything he has provided to me, I've made the decision to charge Christopher Schur with one count of second-degree murder. Second-degree murder is a felony offense. It is punishable by up to life in prison with the possibility of parole.
Video of Lioia's killing shows Officer Schur wrestled him to the ground, kicked and hit him, attempted to electrocute him with a taser and pinned him on his stomach before pulling his pistol and firing a single round into Lioia's head at close range. After the indictment was announced, the Grand Rapids police chief recommended that Officer Christopher Schur be fired. The Justice Department's opened a civil rights investigation into the abuses by the Louisiana State Police after a series of violent arrests of black men. The probe is focused on white officers with State Police Troop F, a notorious unit in northeastern Louisiana whose officers have mislabeled body camera videos, turned off their cameras during arrests, and otherwise worked to hide evidence from investigators. In 2019, Ronald Green, a black man, died in the custody of Troop F officers who repeatedly choked and beat and electrocuted him with a stun gun. Another black man targeted by the white officers was punched, stunned, and hoisted to his feet by his hair braids. Another was beaten after he was handcuffed, and yet another was slammed 18 times with a flashlight. The Wall Street Journal reports Abbott Laboratories was alerted to problems at one of its infant formula plants months earlier than previously known. The journal reports an Abbott employee filed a complaint of failing equipment in need of repair and potentially unsafe formula back in February of 2021. That's a full 8 months before another complaint was filed by the same person last October and a full year before the plant was shut down last February. Abbott recently restarted production of some of its infant formulas at its Sturgis, Michigan plant. And the Massachusetts state legislature voted Thursday to override Republican Governor Charlie Baker's veto of a bill allowing undocumented people to obtain driver's licenses. Beginning in July 2023, anyone showing a foreign passport or consular identification document and another form of ID can apply for a motor vehicle license in Massachusetts. 16 other states and the District of Columbia already have similar laws on the books. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. The House committee investigating the January 6th insurrection has accused Donald Trump of staging an attempted coup to overthrow the will of the American people by trying to overturn the 2020 election. In its first hearing, this one in primetime, the House committee revealed Trump's own attorney general, William Barr, as well as Trump's daughter Ivanka, thought there was no basis for Trump's claims of election fraud. The committee also revealed multiple Republican lawmakers who backed Trump's attempted coup, including Representative Scott Perry of Pennsylvania, sought presidential pardons after the January 6th insurrection. New details also emerged about how two far-right groups, the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers, led the insurrection at the Capitol, heeding a call from Trump for wild protests on January 6th. Today, we spend the hour airing excerpts from this historic hearing. This is how the hearing began.
I'm Benny Thompson, chairman of the January 6th, 2021 committee. I was born, raised, and still live in Bolton, Mississippi, a town with a population of 521, which is midway between Jackson and Vicksburg, Mississippi, and the Mississippi River. I'm from a part of the country where people justify the actions of slavery, the Ku Klux Klan, and lynching. I'm reminded of that dark history as I hear voices today try and justify the actions of the insurrectionists on January 6, 2021.
January 6 Committee Chair Benny Thompson is the only African American in Mississippi's congressional delegation. His district includes most of Jackson, and it's the only majority black district in the state. He went on to talk in detail about what he described as Trump's attempted coup.
Donald Trump lost the presidential election in 2020. The American people voted him out of office. It was not because of a rigged system. It was not because of voter fraud. Don't believe me? Hear what his former attorney general had to say about it. I warn those who watching that this contains strong language.
No, just what I had three discussions with the president that I can recall. One was on November 23rd, one was on December 1st, and one was on December 14th. And I've been through sort of the give and take of those discussions. And in that context, I made it clear I did not agree with the idea of saying the election was stolen and putting out this stuff, which I told the president was bullshit. And, you know, I didn't want to be a part of it. And that's one of the reasons that went into me deciding to leave when I did. I observed, I think it was on December 1st, that, you know, how can we, you can't live in a world where the incumbent administration stays in power based on its view, unsupported by specific evidence, that the election, that there was fraud in the election.
Bill Barr, on Election Day 2020, he was the Attorney General of the United States, the top law enforcement official in the country, telling the president exactly what he thought about claims of a stolen election. Donald Trump had his days in court to challenge the results. He was within his rights to seek those judgments. In the United States, law-abiding citizens have those tools for pursuing justice. He lost in the courts, just as he did at the ballot box. And in this country, that's the end of the line. But for Donald Trump, that was only the beginning of what became a sprawling, multi-step conspiracy aimed at overturning the presidential election, aimed at throwing out the votes of millions of Americans, your votes, your voice in our democracy, and replacing the will of the American people with his will to remain in power after his term ended. Donald Trump was at the center of this conspiracy. And ultimately, Donald Trump, the president of the United States, spurred a mob of domestic enemies of the Constitution to march down the Capitol and subvert American democracy. Any legal jargon you hear about seditious conspiracy, obstruction of an official proceeding, conspiracy to defraud the United States, boils down to this. January 6th was the culmination of an attempted coup, a brazen attempt, as one rioter put it shortly after January 6th, to overthrow the government. The violence was no accident. It represents Senate Trump's last stand, most desperate chance to halt the transfer of power.
January 6th, House Committee Chair Benny Thompson at last night's hearing. When we come back, we'll hear from Vice Chair Liz Cheney, one of two Republicans on the committee. predict a riot by Kaiser Chiefs. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue our coverage of the first House Select January 6th committee hearing, we turn now to the committee's vice chair, Liz Cheney, one of two Republicans who agreed to join the committee.
Mr. Chairman, at 6:01 p.m. on January 6th, after he spent hours watching a violent mob besiege, attack, and invade our Capitol, Donald Trump tweeted, but he did not condemn the attack. Instead, he justified it. These are the things and events that happen, he said, when a sacred landslide election victory is so unceremoniously and viciously stripped away from great patriots who've been badly and unfairly treated for so long. As you will see in the hearings to come, President Trump believed his supporters at the Capitol, and I quote, were doing what they should be doing. This is what he told his staff as they pleaded with him to call off the mob, to instruct his supporters to leave. Over a series of hearings in the coming weeks, you will hear testimony, live and on video, from more than half a dozen former White House staff in the Trump administration, all of whom were in the West Wing of the White House on January 6th. You will hear testimony that, quote, the president did not really want to put anything out calling off the riot or asking his supporters to leave. You will hear that President Trump was yelling and, quote, really angry at advisors who told him he needed to be doing something more. And aware of the rioters' chance to hang Mike Pence, the president responded with this sentiment, quote, maybe our supporters have the right idea. Mike Pence, quote, deserves it. Republican Congressmember Liz Cheney went on to describe what she called Donald Trump's seven-part plan to overturn the election. On the morning of January 6th, President Donald Trump's intention was to remain president of the United States, despite the lawful outcome of the 2020 election and in violation of his constitutional obligation to relinquish power. Over multiple months, Donald Trump oversaw and coordinated a sophisticated seven-part plan to overturn the presidential election and prevent the transfer of presidential power. In our hearings, you will see evidence of each element of this plan. In our second hearing, you will see that Donald Trump and his advisors knew that he had, in fact, lost the election. But despite this, President Trump engaged in a massive effort to spread false and fraudulent information to convince huge portions of the U.S. population that fraud had stolen the election from him. This was not true. Jason Miller was a senior Trump campaign spokesman. In this clip, Miller describes a call between the Trump campaign's internal data expert and President Trump a few days after the 2020 election.
I was in the Oval Office, and at some point in the conversation, Matt Oskowski, who is the lead data person, was brought on, and I remember he delivered to the president pretty blunt terms that he was going to lose.
And that was based, Mr. Miller, on Matt and the data team's assessment of the sort of county-by-county, state-by-state results as reported?
Correct.
Alex Cannon was one of President Trump's campaign lawyers. He previously worked for the Trump Organization. One of his responsibilities was to assess allegations of election fraud in November 2020. Here is one sample of his testimony discussing what he told White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows.
I remember a call with Mr. Meadows, where Mr. Meadows was asking me what I was finding and if I was finding anything. And I remember sharing with him that we weren't finding anything that would be sufficient to change the results in any of the key states.
When was that conversation?
Probably in November. mid to late November. I think it was before my child was born.
And what was Mr. Meadows' reaction to that information?
I believe the words he used were, so there's no there there.
There's no there there. The Trump campaign's general counsel, Matt Morgan, gave similar testimony. He explained that all of the fraud allegations and the campaign's other election arguments taken together and viewed in the best possible light for President Trump could still not change the outcome of the election. President Trump's Attorney General Bill Barr also told Donald Trump his election claims were wrong.
Repeatedly told the president in no uncertain terms that I did not see evidence of fraud and you know, that would have affected the outcome of the election. And frankly, a year and a half later, I haven't seen anything to change my mind on that.
Attorney General Barr also told President Trump that his allegations about Dominion voting machines were groundless.
I saw absolutely zero basis for the allegations, but they were made in such a sensational way that they obviously were influencing a lot of people, members of the public, that there was this systemic corruption in the system and that their votes didn't count and that these machines controlled by somebody else were actually determining it, which was complete nonsense. And it was being laid out there. And I told them that it was crazy stuff and they were wasting their time on that. And it was doing a great, grave disservice to the country.
But President Trump persisted, repeating the false Dominion allegations in public at least a dozen more times, even after his attorney general told him they were, quote, complete nonsense. And after Barr's resignation on December 23rd, the acting attorney general who replaced him, Jeff Rosen, and the acting deputy, Richard Donahue, told President Trump over and over again that the evidence did not support allegations he was making in public. Many of President Trump's White House staff also recognized that the evidence did not support the claims President Trump was making. This is the president's daughter commenting on Bill Barr's statement that the department found no fraud sufficient to overturn the election.
How did that affect your perspective about the election when Attorney General Barr made that statement?
It affected my perspective. I respect Attorney General Barr. So I accepted what he said, was saying.
That was Ivanka Trump, Trump's daughter and advisor, who spent hours alone with Donald Trump on that January 6th afternoon during the riot. She also testified before the committee for about 8 hours. During the hearing on Thursday evening, Vice Chair Liz Cheney also featured video testimony from Donald Trump's advisor and son-in-law, Ivanka Trump's husband, Jared Kushner.
The White House staff knew that President Trump was willing to entertain and use conspiracy theories to achieve his ends. They knew the president needed to be cut off from all of those who had encouraged him. They knew that President Donald Trump was too dangerous to be left alone, at least until he left office on January 20th. These are important facts for Congress and the American people to understand fully. When a president fails to take the steps necessary to preserve our union, or worse, causes a constitutional crisis, we're at a moment of maximum danger for our republic. Some in the White House took responsible steps to try to prevent January 6th. Others egged the president on. Others who could have acted refused to do so. In this case, the White House counsel was so concerned about potentially lawless activity that he threatened to resign multiple times. That is exceedingly rare and exceedingly serious. It requires immediate attention, especially when the entire team threatens to resign. However, in the Trump White House, it was not exceedingly rare, and it was not treated seriously. This is a clip of Jared Kushner addressing multiple threats by White House counsel Pat Cipollone and his team of lawyers to resign in the weeks before January 6th. Jared, are you aware of instances where Pat Cipollone threatened to resign?
I kind of, like I said, my interest at that time was on trying to get as many pardons done. And I know that, you know, he was always, him and the team were always saying, oh, we're going to resign. We're not going to be here if this happens, if that happens. So I kind of took it up to just be whining, to be honest with you.
Whining. There's a reason why people serving in our government take an oath to the Constitution. As our founding fathers recognized, democracy is fragile. People in positions of public trust are duty-bound to defend it, to step forward when action is required. In our country, we don't swear an oath to an individual or a political party. We take our oath to defend the United States Constitution. And that oath must mean something. Tonight, I say this to my Republican colleagues who are defending the indefensible. There will come a day when Donald Trump is gone, but your dishonor will remain.
That's Wyoming Republican Congressmember Liz Cheney, vice chair of the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection. She's also the daughter of former Vice President Dick Cheney. During the hearing, an extended clip was aired documenting minute by minute what happened on January 6th. It began at 10 a.m. when members of the Proud Boys gathered on the National Mall in Washington.
Proud of your boy!
Proud of your boy!
Yeah, just for awareness, be advised, there's probably about 300 Proud Boys. They're marching eastbound in this 400 block of kind of Independence, actually on the mall towards the United States Capitol.
I am not allowed to say what's going to happen today because everyone's just going to have to watch for themselves. But it's going to happen. Something's going to happen.
Who's free? Our streets! Who's free? Our streets! Who's free? Our streets!
11:22 a.m., Proud Boys marched by the Peace Circle Monument toward the Capitol.
Don't make us go against you!
Understand?
These are our streets!
11:48, Proud Boys stopped for photo in front of the east side of the Capitol.
I hope Mike is going to do the right thing. I hope so.
12:05 p.m., Donald Trump.
Because if Mike Pence does the right thing, we win the election. All Vice President Pence has to do is send it back to the states to recertify, and we become president, and you are the happiest people. Mike Pence is going to have to come through for us, and if he doesn't, that will be a sad day for our country, because you'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength, and you have to be strong.
Cruiser 50, it does look like we're going to have an ad hoc march stepping off here. There's a crowd surge heading east.
We love Trump! We love Trump! We love Trump! We love Trump!
Proud Boy Joe Biggs, now in jail, awaiting trial on charges including seditious conspiracy.
I hope you're going to stand up for the good of our Constitution and for the good of our country.
That's Donald Trump.
And if you're not, I'm going to be very disappointed in you, I will tell you right now.
Twelve fifty-four. First breach of the Capitol grounds.
We defend both of the circle. Breach the line. We need backup.
The Vice President and the United States Senate.
1 p.m. Joint session of Congress begins.
To 50 be advised, Cal Police 1 advised they're trying to breach and get into the Capitol.
Yeah, I copy.
Proud Boy Dominic Pizzola breaches window on Upper West Terrace of the Capitol building.
We have a breach of the Capitol. Breach of the Capitol to the upper level.
Jack, be advised, they're requesting additional resources on the east side as they have broken into that window and they're trying to kick it in.
Kick it in. 2:14 p.m., Proud Boy Joe Biggs enters the Capitol.
Without objection, the chair declares the House in recess pursuant to Clause 12B of Rule 1.
2:18 p.m. Outside, protester reads Donald Trump tweet. Crowd chants, hang Mike Pence. There's a hangman's noose outside.
We need an area for the housing members. They're all walking over now through the tunnels.
2:28 p.m., Leader McCarthy's office. Mob runs through.
We're trying to hold the upper deck. We are trying to hold the upper deck now. We need to hold the doors of the Capitol. I need police support.
Police are being attacked outside. Inside, crowd chants, Nancy, Nancy.
And Jack, Cruiser 50, be advised that Capitol Police is going to start moving their resources inside. They're going to start the M4 officers first.
Oath keepers approach central east door of Capitol Building. It's 2:38 p.m. Oath keepers enter building.
208 with four members. The doors barricade. There's people flooded the hallways outside. We have no way out.
In fact, officers still remaining on the house floor, on the third floor, to use the subway themselves. It's time to evacuate so we can secure the members on the other side. Copy.
It's up to us people now, the American people.
I thought you were ready to do.
One more time.
I thought you were ready to do.
And whatever it takes, I'll lay my life down if it takes.
Absolutely. That's why we showed up today.
Oh!
were great people. The crowd was unbelievable. And I mentioned the word love. The love in the air. I've never seen anything like it.
That was a video of the January 6th insurrection aired during Thursday's House Select Committee, the first of a series of public hearings. The next is Monday morning. When we come back, we'll air more excerpts, including Capitol Police Officer Caroline Edwards describing her experience. Future by of Montreal. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue our coverage of Thursday's House January 6th historic hearing, we turn to the British filmmaker Nick Quested, who was embedded with the Proud Boys on January 6th. He was the first of two live witnesses.
As stated, in the winter of 2020, I was working on a documentary. As part of that documentary, I filmed several rallies in Washington, D.C., on December the 11th and December the 12th. And I learned there would be a rally on the Mall on January 6th. So my three colleagues and I came down to document the rally. According to the permit of the event, there was going to be a rally at the Ellipse. We arrived at the Mall and observed a large contingent of Proud Boys marching towards the Capitol. We filmed them, and almost immediately I was separated from my colleagues. I documented the crowd turn from protesters to rioters, to insurrectionists. I was surprised at the size of the group, the anger and the profanity. And for anyone who didn't understand how violent that event was, I saw it, I documented it, and I experienced it. I heard incredibly aggressive chanting, and I subsequently shared that footage with the authorities. I'm here today pursuant to a House subpoena. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Quested. The Select Committee has conducted extensive investigative work to understand what led the Proud Boys and other rioters to the Capitol on January 6th. We've obtained substantial evidence showing that the President's December 19th tweet calling his followers to Washington, D.C. on January 6th energized individuals from the Proud Boys and other extremist groups. I'd like to play a brief video highlighting some of this evidence.
My name is Marcus Childress, and I'm an investigative counsel for the Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol.
What do you want to call them? Give me a name. Give me a
white
name.
Supremacists and
white
supremacists.
White
supremacists and white
Proud Boys, stand back and stand by.
After he made this comment, Enrique Terrio, then chairman of the Proud Boys, said on Parler, "Standing by, sir." During our investigation, we learned that this comment during the presidential debate actually led to an increase in membership from the Proud Boys.
Would you say that Proud Boys members increased after the stand back, stand by comment?
Exponentially. I'd say tripled, probably, with the potential for a lot more eventually.
And did you ever sell any stand back and stand by merchandise?
One of the vendors on my page actually beat me to it, but I wish I would have made a stand back, stand by shirt.
On December 19th, President Trump tweeted about the January 6th rally and told attendees, "Be there, we'll be wild." Many of the witnesses that we interviewed were inspired by the president's call and came to D.C. for January 6th. But the extremists, they took it a step further. They viewed this tweet as a call to arms. A day later, the Department of Justice describes how the Proud Boys created a chat called the Ministry of Self-Defense Leadership Chat. In this chat, the Proud Boys established a command structure in anticipation of coming back to D.C. on January 6th. The Department of Justice describes Mr. Tarrio coming into possession of a document called the 1776 Returns. which describes individuals occupying key buildings around the United States Capitol. The Oath Keepers are another group that the committee investigated.
You better get your ass to D.C., folks, this Saturday.
Yeah, if you don't, there'll be no more republic. But we're not going to let that happen. It's not even an if. It's either President Trump is encouraged and bolstered and strengthened to do what he must do, or we wind up in a bloody fight. We all know that. The fight's coming.
The Oath Keepers began planning to block the peaceful transfer of power shortly after the November 3rd election. And according to the Department of Justice, Stuart Rhodes, the Oath Keepers leader, said to his followers that we were not going to get through this without a civil war. In response to the December 19th, 2020 tweet by President Trump, the Oath Keepers focused on January 6th in Washington, D.C. In response to the tweet, one member, the president of the Florida chapter, put on social media, "The president called us to the Capitol. He wants us to make it wild." The goal was for the Oath Keepers to be called to duty so that they could keep the president in power, although President Trump had just lost the election. The committee learned that the Oath Keepers set up quick reaction forces outside of the city in Virginia where they stored arms. The goal of these quick reaction forces was to be on standby just in case President Trump invoked the Insurrection Act.
Did the Oath Keepers ever provide weapons to members?
I'm going to decline to answer that. I put them at grounds for due process grounds.
In footage obtained by the committee, we learned that on the night of January 5th, Enrique Tarrio and Stuart Rhodes met in a parking garage in Washington, D.C.
There's mutual respect there. I think we're fighting the same fight, and I think that's what's important.
The committee learned that the Oath Keepers went into the Capitol through the east doors in two stack formations. The DOJ alleges that one of the stacks went into the Capitol looking for Speaker Pelosi, although they never found her. As the attack was unfolding, Mr. Tarrio took credit. In documents obtained by the Department of Justice, Mr. Tarrio said in an encrypted chat, "Make no mistake, and we did this." Later on that evening, Mr. Tarrio even posted a video which seemed to resemble him in front of the Capitol with a black cape. And the title of the video was Premonition. The evidence developed by the Select Committee and the Department of Justice highlights how each group participated on the attack on the Capitol on January 6th.
In fact, the investigation revealed that it was individuals associated with the Proud Boys who instigated the initial breach at the Peace Circle at 12:53 p.m.
Within 10 minutes, rioters had already filled the Lower West Plaza. By 2 o'clock, rioters had reached the doors on the west and the east plazas. And by 2:13, rioters had actually broken through the Senate wing door and gotten into the Capitol building. A series of breaches followed. At 2:25 p.m., rioters breached the east side doors to the rotunda. And then right after 2:40 p.m., rioters breached the east side doors near the Ways and Means Room. Once the rioters infiltrated the Capitol, they moved through the crypt, the rotunda, the hallways leading to the House chambers, and even inside the Senate chambers.
Individuals associated with two violent extremist groups have been charged with seditious conspiracy in connection with the January 6th attack. One is the Oath Keepers. They are a group of armed anti-government extremists. The other group is the Proud Boys. They promote white supremacist beliefs and have engaged in violence with people they view as their political enemies. Members of both groups have already pled guilty to crimes associated with the January 6th attack. Mr. Quested, as part of the documentary you've been filming, you gain access to the Proud Boys and their leader, Enrique Tarrio. Your crew filmed them in Washington, D.C. on the evening of January 5th and then on January 6th. On January 5th, the night before the attack, you were with the head of the Proud Boys, Mr. Tarrio, in Washington, D.C. What happened?
We picked up Mr. Tarrio from jail. He'd been arrested for carrying some magazines, some extra capacity magazines, and he took responsibility for the burning of the Black Lives Matter flag that was stolen from the church on December the 12th. We were attempting to get an interview with Mr. Tarrio. We had no idea of any of the events that were going to subsequently happen. We drove him to pick up his bags from the property department of the police, which is just south of the mall. We picked up his bags and went to get some other bags from the Phoenix Hotel, where we encountered Mr. Stuart Rhodes from the Oath Keepers. By the time I'd gone to park the car, my colleague was saying, who'd got into the car with Mr. Tarrio, that they had moved to a location around the corner, the parking garage of the Hall of Legends, I believe. And so we quickly drove over there. We drove down into the parking garage and filmed the scene of Mr. Tarrio and Mr. Rhodes and certain other individuals in that garage.
So what you're saying is you filmed the meeting between Mr. Tarrio and Oath Keepers leader Stuart Rhodes, right?
Indeed.
You couldn't hear what was said, but according to the Justice Department indictment of Mr. Tarrio, a participant referenced the Capitol.
House January 6th Committee Chair Benny Thompson questioning British filmmaker Nick Quested, who was embedded with the Proud Boys on January 6th. The other witness who testified live during Thursday's primetime hearing was Capitol Police Officer Carolyn Edwards, who suffered a traumatic brain injury as she tried to hold the line outside the Capitol with fellow officers. She was with Officer Brian Sicknick, who she said appeared to have been sprayed in the face, was extremely pale. Sicknick died the next day. Edwards testified the pro-Trump mob included Proud Boys leader Joseph Biggs, who's now facing federal seditious conspiracy charges. At the hearing, a number of police officers and Sicknick's fiancée sat behind Carolyn Edwards as she testified.
The tables started turning once the Arizona group is what you said, the crowd with orange hats, they came up chanting F-U-C-K, Antifa, and they joined that group. And once they joined that group, Joseph Biggs' rhetoric turned to the Capitol Police. He started asking us questions like, you didn't miss a paycheck during the pandemic, mentioning stuff about our pay scale was mentioned. And, you know, started turning the tables on us. And I've worked, I can, you know, conservatively say probably hundreds of civil disturbance events. I know when I'm being turned into a villain, and that's when I turned to my sergeant and I stated the understatement of the century. I said, Sarge, I think we're going to need a few more people down here. And so after that, you know, I think they started conferring. They went a little silent. They started conferring among each other. I saw the person now identified as Ryan Samsel. He put his arm around Joseph Biggs, and they were talking. And then they started approaching the first barricade. They ripped the first barricade down, and they approached our bike racks. You know, at that time, we started holding on, grabbing the bike racks. You know, there weren't many of us, so I grabbed the middle between two different bike racks. And, you know, I wasn't under any pretense that I could hold it for very long, but I just wanted to, you know, make sure that we could get more people down and get our CDU units time to answer the call. So We started grappling over the bike racks. I felt the bike rack come on top of my head, and I was pushed backwards, and my foot caught the stair behind me, and I my chin hit the handrail, and then I, at that point, I had blacked out, but my the back of my head clipped the concrete stairs behind me.
And you were knocked unconscious, is that right, Officer Edwards?
Yes, ma'am.
But then when you regained consciousness, even with the injuries, you returned to duty, is that right?
Yes, ma'am. You know, at that time, adrenaline kicked in. I ran towards the west front, and I tried to hold the line at the Senate steps at the Lower West Terrace. More people kept coming at us. It just seemed like, you know, more and more people started, you know, coming onto the west front. They started overpowering us. And that was right about when MPD's officers showed up. Their bike officers pushed the crowd back and allowed our CDU units, as well as theirs, to form that line that you see, that very thin line between us and the protesters or the rioters, you know, at that time. I fell behind that line. And for a while, I started decontaminating people who had gotten sprayed and treating people medically who needed it. When I fell behind that line and I saw, I can just remember my breath catching in my throat, because what I saw was just a war scene. It was something like I had seen out of the movies. I couldn't believe my eyes. There were officers on the ground. You know, they were bleeding. They were throwing up. They were, you know, they had, I mean, I saw friends with blood all over their faces. I was slipping in people's blood. You know, I was catching people as they fell. It was carnage. It was chaos. I can't even describe what I saw.
Capitol Police Officer Carolyn Edwards, who suffered a traumatic brain injury on January 6th. She was questioned by Republican Congress member Vice Chair Liz Cheney. That does it for today's show and our recap of the first public hearing of the U.S. House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol. The committee holds its next hearing Monday morning. We will live stream it at 10 a.m. Eastern at democracynow.org. On Monday on Democracy Now!, we will speak with Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez about his newly updated edition of the landmark book, Harvest of Empire, A History of Latinos in America. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Fels, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tommy Warrenoff, Camille Baker, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astugio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Honey Masood. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
WRZT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM Rock.